On Tech News Today, Apple apparently announced a few things yesterday, plus Facebook snubs Microsoft, and your favorite geek cartoon from the 90s is getting a reboot. It's all coming up next on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Tuesday, June 9th, 2015. This episode is brought to you by Prosper. Prosper is a peer-to-peer lending marketplace that connects people who are looking to borrow money with those who have money to lend. Visit prosper.com/twit and receive a $50 Visa gift card when you get a loan. And by ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post to 100-plus job sites, including social networks, all with a single click. Screen, rate, and hire the right candidates fast. Try ZipRecruiter with a free 4-day trial now at ZipRecruiter.com/TNT. Tech News Today is the show where we talk about the tech news with the journalists who report it. I'm Mike Elgin. Welcome to the show. Our co-anchor today is After Nine's content czar, Joe Panettiere. Hey, Joe, how you doing?
Doing great, Mike. How have you been?
I've been great, except for over here, they're doing all kinds of set design, and it's like really like they're doing it on purpose just to throw me off. I'm watching you, Jerry. But I'm doing great. The big Apple news yesterday was quite astonishing. We're going to get into that story in just about like 5 seconds. But first, I just have to say, you know, we covered it live here, and it was a very tight, concise announcement until they got to Apple Music. And then the whole thing went off the rails, and it was a confusing mess. It was wordy. It was boring.
Is it any clearer today?
I don't think so. We're going to find out in just a second. But it was just it was just a bizarre announcement as far as I could tell. But I don't know. What was your quick take on that?
I don't know. You and I have discussed this in previous shows where I think Apple's strategy in terms of dominating digital, it's like they wrote the playbook more than a decade ago now. And now that everyone's seen that first playbook, it's so difficult for Apple to repeat or add a new chapter to that playbook without everybody being so cynical and or the content providers really holding Apple over a barrel. So I'm more skeptical than usual. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. And there was some really cool stuff there, and we'll get right into that. Of course, Apple did announce a really wide range of products, features, updates, and other changes. Lauren Good is a reporter for Recode. Sarah Mitroff is a software reviews editor for CNET. And Dan Seifert is reviews editor for The Verge. They all join us to talk about the big Apple announcement. Welcome to all three of you.
Hello.
Hey, Mike. Hello.
It's like one-third of the Brady Bunch there. Lauren, let's start with you. Apple made some big changes to iOS, and I think some of the biggest changes were in Siri. What Siri changes struck you as being the most interesting?
One of the things that Apple talked a lot about is making, Siri smarter, first of all. I think Craig Federighi said on stage that Siri has become quietly popular in the time since she has launched. And they're doing something called basically proactive assistant, which in some ways sounded a little bit like what Google has already been doing with Google Now. But the idea is now that Siri basically can operate in a variety of different ways to make the whole experience a little bit smarter. You could, for example, be in a message thread with somebody and that person could say, hey, can you pick up the example they kept using on stage was the karaoke machine for later on. And you can tap into Siri and say, remind me to pick up that thing. And using natural language processing, Siri would be able to process that. There's also going to be a new feature in iOS 9 where you swipe to the left now rather than pulling down for search. And all of these apps are popping up that the phone basically thinks you want to use next or you most frequently use. And so those are just a couple examples of ways that Apple is trying to make the whole on-device experience a little bit smarter with Siri.
Hey, Lauren, these Siri enhancements, are these available immediately or are these teasers that where they want developers to write for these enhancements so that the apps get smarter and smarter? What's sort of the time frame here?
That's a very good question. Apple is planning on releasing iOS 9 as some sort of beta sometime this summer, and then will be fully released in the fall. So that's kind of all we know right now in terms of its availability.
Now, Sarah, you wrote a really great piece about Apple Music and highlighting the difference between Apple Music and Spotify. I personally was kind of stunned that Apple was going through the core features of their Apple Music app, and they were trotting out really boring, nothing new type of features. Oh, look, there's a play button. Stuff like that. And I was kind of astonished, of course, the sort of social network for celebrities was kind of interesting. But can you walk us through Apple Music and what you thought, if anything, was interesting about it, different about it? How in fact, did it differ from Spotify?
Right. I mean, so it's very similar to Spotify as far as the features go, as far as playing music is concerned. The catalogs both boast 30 million songs, Spotify and Apple Music, although there's some questions about exactly what will be included in that catalog. We don't know yet. We won't know till the end of the month when it actually debuts, but Apple promises it'll be the entire iTunes library. I mean, that's a lot of different music that hasn't necessarily been available in other streaming services like the Beatles, who have had restrictions. We don't know if that'll actually be part of it, but it'd be great if it was. But the other, like, sort of fringe features are what's different here. There's a whole new live global radio station called Beats One. Promises to be playing music 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and having sort of a curated bend to it. There's going to be experts talking about what's hot in music, what's new in music culture, and playing great music. I mean, they're calling it great music. We don't know if it'll fit everyone's personal taste. Who knows? And then, like you said, connect the social media features, which are really just for artists to be able to publish, you know, insider content, videos, mixtapes, demos. I mean, their list went on and on about just ways that they can send us, the fans, stuff that we might want. I don't know if it's going to be super compelling. We'll be able to like or maybe comment on that stuff, maybe have interactions with the artists. But it's going to be, I think, hard to get every artist out there to use this and use this for a long time. Of course, they had all these launch partners. They had Drake on stage talking about how awesome this is. But 6 months down the road, a year from now, I mean, how many artists are going to keep up on this when there's so many other social media platforms to be used?
Now, very quickly, there are some reports that says that a few things, you had mentioned that the whole iTunes catalog is going to be available through this, but it's looking like there may be a few exceptions, including the Beatles. They're always a problem with iTunes, and a couple of others. It'll be almost all of the iTunes library. Now, very quickly, this Connect feature, I thought, has potential. In other words, it has potential to be a genuine differentiator for Apple because, of course, with Jimmy Iovine and the weight and heft of Apple and the money and all that stuff, they might be able to get lots of buy-in by the celebrity public. And then, you know, new and up-and-coming artists might jump in on it and younger people who aren't going to want to listen to BBC radio, essentially. It's like something that's a throwback. I don't know if anybody's ever listened to BBC radio. I've tried. Their taste in music is bizarre. So I don't know what that's going to be like. But in any event, I think this Connect feature could be a differentiator. Can you go into a little bit of detail on what Connect is exactly? Is this a social network for artists? Is this a sort of a promotional opportunity? I'm not really picturing what Connect is going to be like.
Yeah, so we don't have like a ton of detail on that. But from what they showed us, it's going to be a tab in this, you know, Apple Music app, where there will likely be just a feed, or you can go to certain like artist profile pages. And the thinking here is like they could be recording video, maybe of them in the studio recording their albums, taking photos, just sort of a platform for them to debut content that they maybe can't share anyplace else or don't want to share anyplace else. And Apple's also heavily emphasized the fact that up-and-coming artists, unsigned artists who don't have a record label could also use this as a platform to just get their music out there, to publish it to people, to just maybe drum up some recognition so that maybe eventually they can get a record deal or just find a whole new publishing platform altogether. There was a really heavy emphasis on that. Just unsigned, unknown artists can use Apple Music and Connect and all these other features to really get their name out there and get the music into us. But yeah, I mean, until we really get our hands on it, it's hard to tell exactly how it's going to be, how fans can interact with it. And there's features like this in Spotify, not to the same level, but you can follow artists to see what they're listening to. You can pay attention to upcoming concerts. So I'm thinking it's going to be similar to that, but maybe way more robust, just a place that you can share a lot more different kinds of content.
Hey, Sarah, one follow-up. Any clues as to whether or not Apple's going to leverage this strategy in sort of a parallel effort or a completely separate effort when it comes to movies in Hollywood? Or is it too soon to say how this music push may or may not influence sort of Hollywood, movies, cable, et cetera?
Yeah, that's a really good point. I would say it's too soon to say. It's sort of the music industry and Hollywood are, you know, very different beasts. And Apple's been really good for a really long time about making a having a marketplace for us to buy movies, to buy TV shows, to buy season passes so that when a new episode comes out, we can get it. I haven't seen them do anything like that, but you're right. I mean, they have the technology in place and they're thinking about this. And, you know, the big streaming... Oh, God, I'm so sorry. My light just went out.
Wave your arms. Put your hands in the air.
So if they have all of this in place and they're already thinking about it, and Apple hasn't really gotten into any kind of streaming, you know, Netflix or Hulu of the world. They've always been focusing on you can buy content. But maybe down the road, they might think about a streaming service and integrating some of these social features so that, you know, you can connect with your favorite directors or your favorite actors, your favorite TV shows. But I think it's too soon to say. That could be years down the road if they ever do it.
Okay, so I want to go to Lauren again. And Dan, I want to apologize to you. We haven't dragged you in yet, but Lauren has a hard out at 10:20. So I'm just going to ask one last question of Lauren, and then we'll put you on the spot, Dan. So Lauren, just looking at the larger scope of what they talked about, the Watch OS was interesting. They mentioned CarPlay. Swift is open source. They have a lot of numbers about the App Store. They talked about all kinds of stuff. They even came out with a Move to iOS app that transports user data from Android to iPhone. Out of all the stuff that Apple announced yesterday, what struck you as being the most surprising, unusual, interesting, important? I'll just give you an open question there to just give your biggest impression from the event yesterday.
Sure. Well, I think in a lot of ways, it felt like sort of a maintenance or a catch-up or a stabilization year, whatever you want to call it for Apple in terms of the different operating systems, especially when it came to OS X and iOS 9. I mean, Watch OS is still a relatively new thing, and I think we're going to see a lot of development coming out of that. A lot's going to change with Watch in the coming months. And I wouldn't call it a surprise because nobody was surprised, but I think the biggest announcement was music. I mean, Apple, of course, sort of revolutionized the way that we buy and consume music more than a decade ago, and now they're trying to do it again. And of course, people are saying, well, you know, there's Pandora, there's Spotify, there's RDO, there's Rhapsody, there's all these different services that have already been doing this. But Apple's strategy traditionally hasn't been, oh, let's do this first before everyone else is doing it. They tend to take more of a wait-and-see approach. And I think it's just going to be really interesting to see whether or not people jump aboard this service. I mean, in some ways, it feels like, you know, the a la carte downloads, we've seen them sort of decreasing over the past few years. We see, like, especially young people are gravitating more towards YouTube for free streaming and that sort of thing. And I think that Apple is finally, you know, acknowledging that this is a real thing and this is a real trend. And they're, you know, throwing a lot of mud at the wall with this music app to see what sticks. And I think that's going to be the most interesting thing in the coming months.
All right, Lauren. Well, I said I'd get you out of here by 10:20, and I'm going to keep my word here. Lauren Good is at Recode.net. You can follow her on Twitter at Lauren Good. That's Lauren, L-A-U-R-E-N, and Good is spelled G-O-O-D-E. Thank you so much for joining us today, Lauren.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Now, Dan, we haven't dragged you into this conversation yet, so I will ask you about OS 9. There's lots of information there, starting with the fact that they're going to have a public beta. That's new. They mentioned a bunch of apps like Notes, Maps, News. They referenced HomeKit a little bit. Tell us what you think is the most important or interesting thing about OS 9 and what they announced yesterday.
Well, like Lauren just said, a lot of OS 9 seems to be maintenance and tightening up things. They are improving the stability of the system. They are focusing on making bugs, or correcting bugs and making it work better than it had in previous years. If you look back at iOS 8, that was a massive feature addition. iOS 7 was a massive design overhaul. But this year, we're not seeing that. We're seeing smaller iterations, smaller updates. As you mentioned, a few of them, the Notes app, the improvements to Siri is a pretty big deal. But for the most part, it should be a better operating system rather than a wildly different experience, unless you have an iPad, which is... They've done a whole bunch of things for the iPad specifically this year, which the iPad hasn't gotten some special love in a long time with iOS. And this year, they're introducing all new ways to interact with iOS on the iPad that really kind of change what the iPad is as a product. And I think it's a really big deal if you're an iPad user or if you're looking to be an iPad user and what the future of the product means.
So Dan, tell us more. What exactly does it mean in terms of these changes that are coming to the iPad? And will they ever show up on the iPhone, or is that just the wrong form factor and iPad's going to be the form factor for these changes you're talking about?
Sure. Well, I mean, for the starters, the features that are new here for the iPad are a new multitasking system that lets you run two apps side by side on the same screen and have them fully interactive, which is something that no iOS device has ever let you do before. There's a new way to kind of sneak a peek at apps while you're in an app, so you don't have to exit an app all the way back to the home screen to look at new messages. You can kind of just slide in a pane there. There's a new way of managing multitasking, so it's easier to switch between applications that you're using. And there's improvements to the keyboard, which makes it easier to enter text and edit the text that you've already entered and move your cursor around and things like that. All of those things make sense more on an iPad because of its larger display size. And a lot of the major new features are only coming to the iPad Air 2 right now. And presumably whatever iPad Apple announces later this year will be, there'll be a highlight feature of them. But that they let you take more advantage of the large screen of the iPad in a way that iOS has never let you do before. If you look at other platforms, like Windows 8 has let you do a lot of very similar things for a long time. Samsung has put very similar things on its tablets. But the iPad has always been a very one-thing-at-a-time modal experience, just like the iPhone. But this is kind of a big change for the iPad. And whether it comes to they bring this to other iOS devices, it's hard to say. A lot of these changes are really take advantage of the bigger screen. And when you don't have that bigger screen, they're not as usable or wouldn't appear to be as functional on, a smaller display like an iPhone.
Now, Sarah, there were a bunch of changes to the Apple Watch, including the fact that the Apple Watch is getting its own branded OS called Watch OS 2, which OS 2 is, if you're old enough, that means something else besides a smartwatch operating system. They got a bunch of new watch faces. Developers can build their own complications, which are the little things that show you the date or, you know, your battery life or whatever. They have something called time travel that lets you just go forward and back in time to see what, you know, you can go forward a day or something like that and see what tomorrow's weather and your calendar and all the rest, the moon, everything changes forward and back. That's kind of a cool feature. You can reply to email. There's a bedside alarm clock. You can send multicolored scribbles. You can play videos. It has activation lock. There's, you know, all kinds of features like that. Do you think this is going to transform the experience of the Apple Watch, or are these just small iterative features that will just be kind of nice but not that big of a deal?
Yeah, so I mean, they made a lot of big updates that I think help improve the stability and the performance of the device, being able to build native apps that run on the watch as opposed to being on your phone and sort of connecting to the watch is a big deal. That sort of promises just better usability, and it promises that you can move away from your phone and have a Wi-Fi connection and still use some of these apps, which I think is a pretty big deal for most people. And other smartwatches like Android Wear watches are moving in that direction as well. But a lot of what people are saying and sort of what we're getting is that, you know, these are kind of updates and iterations on this sort of first generation. And everyone's kind of waiting, well, what's the next watch going to be like? A lot of people have, you know, been really impressed by the design and sort of the materials that these watches have been using, and they're really beautiful. But everyone's kind of like, well, it's going to be like the first iPhone. You know, it's great, but there's going to be so many more updates than when they release a new version. So I think these are sort of stepping stones to what Apple's eventually going to do with, you know, the next version of the watches, whether that comes out this year or next year. But they're all sort of small improvements that I think help the pain points that people have had with the watches and just make it a little bit more user-friendly, just give you more information. I mean, I'm kind of blown away by how much information they're trying to cram onto this tiny little screen. And you can watch a video, and I don't think many people want to watch it on a tiny little 2-inch, 3-inch screen. But they're really just trying to cram more information and just make the experience a little bit better. I don't think it's revolutionary. I think it's just kind of stepping in that next direction.
And of course, those are the highlights, and we don't have time to go into the whole thing. We're trying to cover a big, big keynote in just 15, 20 minutes here. But just in brief, OS X El Capitan, El Capitan being, of course, a Yosemite reference, but if you're from Southern California and you've done any surfing, that's also a hot surf spot north of Santa Barbara. They also had natural language searches, and their auto arranges windows. You can make the cursor bigger by shaking the mouse pointer and so on, or the touchpad. Safari's faster, a bunch of other changes. They talked about Metal, the graphics API. It's coming to the Macintosh. Whole bunch of things that we didn't get a chance to cover today. Of course, Swift is open source and so on. Lots of coverage. And if you are interested in a more detailed conversation about this, stick around, because immediately after this show is Mac Break Weekly. It's 11 a.m. Pacific. And I have the feeling, I'm not clairvoyant or I can't predict the future, but I have the feeling they might talk about the announcement yesterday and probably for about 2 hours. And that's a brilliant crew and they know everything there is to know about Apple and their products and services. All right. Well, Sarah Mitroff is at CNET.com and you can follow her on Twitter at Sarah Mitroff. Thank you so much for joining us today, Sarah.
Thank you.
And Dan Seifert is at TheVerge.com and you can follow him on Twitter at DC Seifert. Thank you for joining us, Dan.
Thank you.
Well, we have some more news for you in just a sec, but first let's talk about Prosper. Prosper is the modern way and the best way to borrow money. You can borrow up to $35,000 in as few as 5 days, and it's super, super easy. Just give some basic information about yourself on the Prosper.com website. You can check your rates and review your loan options. And then once lenders invest in your loan, that's right, it's an investment opportunity for investors. The money is deposited directly into your bank account. You can do all kinds of things with a Prosper loan. You can pay off high rate credit cards, fix up the house, put it into your business. You can buy a car. You can even finance environmentally friendly projects, which they call a green loan. Always a great idea. And of course, you know, it's just the way to borrow money. And of course, don't put more money on your credit cards. You can pay off those credit cards instead. That's the way to go. You can check your low rate instantly without affecting your good credit score. Just go to prosper.com/twit. And now, for a limited time, Prosper is offering Twit viewers and listeners a $50 Visa gift card with your low interest loan. You can get up to $35,000 in your account in as few as 5 days, plus a $50 Visa gift card. Go to prosper.com/twit for this special offer just for Twit viewers and listeners. We thank Prosper for their support of Tech News Today. Well, Facebook snubbed former Microsoft friend, their friend Microsoft yesterday by discontinuing an important API that provided some integration between Facebook and several Microsoft products and services. Paul Thurrott is the author of more than 24 books, a host of Twit's own Windows Weekly, Wednesdays at 11 a.m. Pacific, and a writer who writes at Thurrott.com. Welcome to you, Paul.
How you doing?
I'm doing great,
thanks. I am a writer who writes.
A writer who writes. That's the best kind, I tell you. Which Microsoft products and services were affected by this change?
Oh, man. It's a huge list. I mean, it's Outlook.com, it's OneDrive, it's Windows 8, Windows Phone 7, Windows Phone 8, you know, Windows Live Essentials, did I say OneDrive, Outlook, part of Office, Office 365, lots and lots of stuff.
Hey, Paul, first of all, good to see you. And then a two-part question. Hey. Number one, any clues as to why Facebook did this? And then number two, can Microsoft do anything to re-engineer or reverse engineer these connections to restore them?
Sure. So, I mean, this stuff dates back 5 years. You know, when Microsoft first announced Windows Phone, one of the big deals there was that integration they were going to have with online services. And Facebook, like many other online services, had these APIs that they could access and integrate with the service. They could send likes and posts and share things, integrate with the calendar, you know, put it into local calendar apps and so forth, contacts as well. And it's sort of a great kind of consumer-centric idea. It was something that the brands like Facebook didn't really like because it de-emphasized their brands and allowed people to stay out of their apps. And so Facebook, like some other services, has decided to promote their own brands through their own apps. And you've seen that on all, it's not just Microsoft platforms, but on iOS and Android as well. They like you to do things through the Facebook app, through the Facebook Messenger app, and so forth. But they did have an API, and that API they had announced some time ago would be removed. And I think they discussed it last year at the developer show, and it just disappeared this year. And so, in the most modern mobile Microsoft platform, Windows Phone 8.1, as of this day, actually these things still work because we have a Facebook app like you would have on Android or iOS, and it can get into your contacts, it can get into your calendar, and that stuff still works. But on desktop Windows, you know, Windows 8, Windows 8.1, and all the online services, you know, having that mobile app on phone doesn't help. And so it kind of, you know, borked the whole system. As far as Microsoft being able to fix it, I mean, I don't see any way other than, you know, Facebook offering that or some update to that kind of integration.
Now, Paul, you know, I get, you know, obviously in the industry, there are friendships and alliances on the one yep. hand, and there are, you know, there are enemies and there's co-opetition. Yes. There's all the whole range of relationships between companies. Probably the most, one of the biggest rivalries is between Google and Apple, for example. Mm-hmm. Facebook and Microsoft used to be really close. You know, I guess they had common enemies to a certain extent. And they've been having a slow falling out involving Skype. Microsoft, you know, dropped some Facebook integration as well as Google Chat integration out of Outlook a couple of months ago, I think. Are they becoming rivals or are they just ceasing to be allies? How would you characterize this changing relationship?
It's funny. I was literally just thinking about this. I still think of them as partners primarily and not so much competitors, although you're right with Skype, of course. I think the Google Chat and Facebook Chat removal from Outlook.com is related to this issue, by the way. And a similar issue with at Google. I don't know. I don't see it as they foresee themselves as going to head-to-head. Microsoft's never going to have a social networking service again. Like a lot of other companies, they've tried. It's not happening. So I don't know where this comes from. It's a strange falling out. I think on Facebook's side, of course, they went to belatedly a little bit to iOS. They're big on Android, of course, as far as OS integration. I just think it's I don't think it's antagonism. I really don't. Although I certainly, as a Microsoft guy, I mean, I look at this as a kind of a shot across the bow. But I don't really think it was meant to be malicious. I think it's just a factor of they can only focus on so many things, and they've moved on, and they have their own strategy, which they, of course, are okay to have.
Yeah. Hey, Paul, any clues in terms of Facebook and Windows 10? Are we expecting any types of integrations there, or is it really too soon to say?
So there's no reason that that can't work the same way in Windows 10 that it does in Windows Phone 8.1 today. And if you think about the Universal App Platform, as you should, as an update to that modern Metro, you know, kind of app platform that we had before Windows 8 and obviously in Windows Phone as well. It's certainly possible that we could see a Facebook app in the future for Windows 10 that would bring this kind of stuff back to the desktop. And I do hope that that happens. The problem is when you look over this list of all the services that are impacted today, and it just kind of happened, you know, there was no real warning that this was going to come. I mean, we knew generally it was coming, but you know, the day it just disappeared one day. This literally impacts hundreds of millions of people, possibly over a billion people, collectively across Windows, across all the online services, and across phone. It's amazing how much it impacts. And Microsoft, by being open to this integration, more so I would say than the other platform makers, is also unfortunately vulnerable when this kind of thing happens.
Now, Paul, whenever there's a big industry keynote or event, I always enjoy your top shelf Twitter headline. And yesterday was no exception. But let me just give you one quick opportunity to just give me your high-level thoughts about yesterday's Apple keynote.
Okay. Snark aside, I would say that...
no need to Apple set snark kinda, aside.
Well, they did what they had to do. I think when you look at Google I.O., when you look at WWDC, you see something very similar. Not a lot of big bang announcements, although I think Apple Music was arguably kind of a big deal. But rather, we have mature platforms. We're going to evolve them in ways that make sense. I look at those two events as being similar in that way, and that they're responding to the competition. Obviously, on the music front, they're responding to Spotify primarily. But a lot of responses to features that are in Android. From the Microsoft side, I see things that are very familiar to me. I'm sure you talked about the Windows 8 Snap type feature that they're adding to iOS,
yep.
Especially on the iPad. But I mean, if I'm being honest with myself, I don't think Apple is so much targeting Microsoft because I don't think they really see them as a direct platform competitor. But they're taking good ideas wherever they come from, as they should, as everyone else does. And so I just look at it as a maturation of the platforms. And there's no negative to it. I think it's all good stuff. I just, it lacks the excitement of a new iPhone or, you know, that kind of stuff. But of course it does. It's a developer show. They have mature platforms for the most part. I thought it was appropriate for the day.
Well, we enjoyed your heckling while we were doing the live event.
And I did have heckling.
Yeah, it was. I think Leo mentioned you a couple of times, your tweets. Paul Thurrott is at Thurrott.com. You spell that Thurrott.com. You know how to spell .com. And you can follow him on Twitter at Thurrott. Thank you so much for joining us, Paul.
Thank you, and good to see you, Joe. And you too, Mike.
Take care, Paul.
Take care.
too. Bye.
And of course, you can get more Paul on Windows Weekly every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific. Facebook, speak of the devil, had plans to build a satellite. Yeah, a satellite. But has canceled those plans, according to a report on The Information. The satellite would have cost about $500 million, and its purpose was to bring cheap internet access to the developing world, although that's, Joe Panettiere, an expensive way to bring cheap internet access anywhere, a satellite. They were going to have a space program, but they scuttled it. I think companies like Facebook, Joe, are becoming more realistic about their moonshots and their big spending. But what's your thought on this story?
Yeah, you know, I think tech valuations are so high that Wall Street's pressuring these companies to really manage their money at least a little bit more responsibly. It's great to have moonshot ideas, but then actually $500 million, $500 million, that's a big price tag. And they are trying to solve, though, the number one issue facing all these companies, and that is global internet coverage and rolling that out to everyone so that more people can consume their services. So on the one hand, I think it's a worthy mission. On the other hand, it's the execution of the mission. Like, what are you actually going to build to bring universal access? That's the side of the conversation that remains really complicated.
And, of course, this is all related to Facebook's internet.org thing. I still don't know what that is. Right. Is that a company? Is it a nonprofit? Is it a desk inside of Mark Zuckerberg's office? I don't know what this is, but in any event, their stated intention is to bring internet connectivity to the developing world, and they've run into some trouble because their plan involves certain types of restrictions which were considered in India especially violations of net neutrality. And so in the wake of this cancellation, I have to wonder whether or not this was, in fact, a self-serving mission to get the developing world using Facebook above all.
Right, right.
But now that they're getting pushback from the developing world about net neutrality, they're thinking, well, why are we going to invest all this money if this isn't going to give us an advantage? I never really believed this was a truly philanthropic effort. It's just, you know, there are lots of ways. And of course, Mark Zuckerberg as a person is philanthropic. He's donated a lot of money to education and other causes. But still, I have to wonder about the timing of this in the wake of the Indian brouhaha over net neutrality. But yeah, very bizarre. And of course, I think Google is also out of the space race as well. So.
Yeah. You know, Mike, you know what it also reminds me of is if you rewind the history of the internet, remember when AOL first came along, right? And people thought they were quote unquote on the internet when they were using AOL services, proprietary, long before they opened up. There's a danger here in the emerging world where you just beam Facebook in and people think that this is an open, you know, new internet web, and actually it's a closed environment that you can never escape.
Yeah, exactly. And of course, Facebook tends to believe or acts like they believe that Facebook is the only alternative you need, providing everything from games to content to videos to all the rest. And so, you know, I guess they're going to have to rethink their strategy for the developing world to a certain extent. But yeah, it is the AOM model, or their Facebook is stingy. They don't send me any free discs. So I have to use regular coasters now. What are you going to do? Well, Facebook, speaking of Facebook, a lot of Facebook news today, is handing out free beacons like candy to U.S. retailers nationwide. Facebook's Place Tips service was rolled out in a limited release in January to a small group of New York City businesses. We covered it back in January. But companies who want to participate now in the nationwide rollout need to apply for a beacon, which enables retailers to push coupons and other promotions to customers. So, you know, one of the things we were talking about when we reported the story earlier is, you know, is every website and social network and anybody who wants to sell anything to anyone going to have a separate beacon? Are you going to walk into your local donut shop and see 50 beacons glued to the wall?
Yeah, it is a little scary, right? Where you wonder just how many services each beacon will support or won't support by design. Yeah. And this is a hot area for every mobile company. Every mobile company absolutely wants to be in the beacon area. Plus, consider this, every data company, every big data company that has a massive data store or data warehouse out on the web, they want beacons gathering information for them. So it really could turn into, your point, multiple beacons on a wall, all sending data off to who knows where.
Yeah, it's going to be weird. Well, in the human resources department, Google's Neil Mohan, who is considered to be the architect of DoubleClick, is leaving Google to join Dropbox. as its head of product, according to a report on Recode. Well, we got some more news for you in just a second, but let's talk about hiring great people like that Mohan character. He would have been a great catch. I wonder if they use ZipRecruiter for that. ZipRecruiter is one of our sponsors today. You can post on ZipRecruiter to 100-plus job sites with a single click, and this is one of the many benefits of using ZipRecruiter. Ease of use. Yeah, you don't want to go from site to site to site to site and in every case deal with however it is you're going to get back those responses. ZipRecruiter will handle the posting on those sites and it will handle the inevitable traffic that you get back in terms of interest in your job. And in addition to the job sites, of course, you can go on the social networks, Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, and Google+. The LinkedIn groups and Facebook pages are in addition to regular posting on profiles and on the Twitter integration, you can automatically tweet your jobs. As soon as you post a job, off it goes out on Twitter, and that's a great way to find people as well. Plus, they'll instantly match you to candidates in their 400 million resume database. That's right. ZipRecruiter is used by more than 400,000 businesses, and you can try it now for free. Try ZipRecruiter today with a free 4-day trial to get your perfect candidate before they go to your competition. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/TNT. That's ZipRecruiter.com/TNT. Got some very big numbers for you today. Some from the Apple event yesterday. Here's a big number, 100 billion. That's how many app downloads Apple says have been downloaded from its App Store in the history of that App Store. Okay, another big number, another B word, 1 billion. That's how many requests Apple says Siri handles per week. Next big number, 5 billion. That's how many requests Apple says its Maps app gets. And in related news, Maps is 5 times more popular than Siri, apparently, in terms of usage. All right, well, that's the Apple big numbers. Here's another big number outside the Appleverse, 249. That's how many dollars OnePlus now charges for its lowest-cost OnePlus One smartphone. The price was initially a one-week sale, but the company decided to keep that price point indefinitely. They're also bundling this 64-gig OnePlus One with Dropbox Pro for $349. That's $50 off the phone and $50 off of Dropbox Pro. That's a great deal. Joe Panettiere, how low can they go? $250 for a really great Android phone? That's a really good deal. It's definitely not an iPhone, is it?
Not an iPhone, but you wonder what other services they may be able to bundle on top of that to make you open your wallet a little bit wider after you have the phone. But I haven't seen any yet. It doesn't seem like a bait and switch. This seems like the real deal.
Yeah, and again, you know, the OnePlus is a great phone. I guess you can buy three of those for the price that you can buy an average iPhone. Just a guess. Well, in news you can lose, remember the 1990s CGI animated TV series Reboot? I do. I used to love that show. It premiered in 1994, and it was shut down in 2001. But now they're going to reboot it. 26 half-hour shows have been greenlit, this time as live-action computer animation hybrid. Let's take a look at the old show's introduction, which looks cheesy now, but at the time was bleeding-edge computer animation.
To this place, mainframe. My format, Guardian. To mend and defend. To defend my newfound friends, their hopes and dreams. To defend them from their enemies.
Dun, dun, dun.
They say the user lives outside the net and inputs games for pleasure. No one knows for sure, but I intend to find out. Reboot!
Maybe they'll find out this time whether users are actually outside the net. Wow, what a show that was, and be interested to see how they do with the new version. Very cool. Well, our TNT fan of the day is Mikey. Great name, Mikey, who posted this picture on Twitter. He says he listens to the show through a Bluetooth speaker on his forklift, and there you can see it. What is that, a rubber band or is that tape? Either way, that is a great way to listen to the show, and I'm sure it's blasting. That looks like a loud environment. Thank you so much for listening, Mikey. Show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup and post it on Google+, Twitter, or Facebook and use the hashtag HowIWatchTNT so we can find it. Joe Panettiere, what's happening at After Nines this week?
Actually, we're hitting the road this week. I'm heading out to Hadoop Summit, which is a big data and analytics conference out in San Jose. For a preview of that, if you're interested in the whole big data conversation and Hadoop, you can go to afternines.com/CEO. Look for a conversation with Hortonworks VP, Sean Connolly. That's episode 39 there. Just went live this morning. We took it live a little bit earlier than usual, just because there's so much interest in what's going on in the big data market right now.
Very cool. Well, thank you so much for co-anchor today, Joe. We'll see you next time.
Always great to be here, Mike. Take care.
All right, take care. You can subscribe to Tech News Today on Spotify. That is a newish way to subscribe. Or you can choose another way to subscribe at twit.tv/TNT. You can watch us live every weekday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1700 UTC at live.twit.tv. And if you're ever in town, come on in and watch us as part of our studio audience. Just send email to tickets@twit.tv before you come in. If you'd like to help us grow our audience, here's how you do it. Just post a link to twit.tv/TNT on your favorite social site and tag three friends along with your recommendation to subscribe. And you can follow us on Facebook on our brand new Facebook page. That's facebook.com/TechNewsTodayTV, accept no imitations. And you can follow me personally on Tumblr at mikeelgin.tumblr.com. And don't miss Tech News Tonight at 4 p.m. Pacific tonight and every single weeknight. That, ladies and gentlemen, is the Tech News Today. This show is produced by Jason Cleanthes and edited by Anthony Nielsen. My name is Mike Elgin. Thanks for tuning in. See you tomorrow.